to another episode of Raven Conversations. My name is Major Callie Kianis.
And I'm Major Laura Dutton.
And this is a very special episode because we are celebrating Women's History Month. So we have a panel of six females talking about
Women's history.
Women's history in the military.
And today we are going to interview this is a two-part interview. Our first half of this will be interviewing new soldiers who are recently experienced in the military and talk about their experience and what they've seen so far. Part two will be talking to senior leaders who have over 30 years of experience and see how their experience has differed from what we're seeing now.
Want to go down the line and introduce ourselves?
Sure. My name is First Lieutenant Paige Bentley. I commissioned out of Princeton Army ROTC in May of 2021. I joined Golf Company 181, supporting one of the 161. I'm a logistics officer, quartermaster, and I'm currently serving as the maintenance platoon leader.
Hi, Second Lieutenant Tessa Doan. I graduated from the University of Washington, and I commissioned out of Federal OCS at Fort Benning, Georgia. And right now, I'm an upper TI platoon leader at Charlie Company 898. I provide signal support services to the battalion and the brigade.
I'm Staff Sergeant Kaylee Meach, Echo Company, 181 BSB. I'm the training NCO, AGR, and I've been in the military for 6 years now.
I'm Sergeant Ashley DeVos. I am training NCO for Delta Company 898. I have been in for around 3.5 years now, and I've joined in 2020.
So we have a variety of experience, kind of doing some different jobs, different levels, and anywhere between 3 and 6 years in. I want to talk to you guys about what brought you into the military. So, Sergeant Lieutenant Doan, what made you want to join the military?
So my dad was in the Army. He was enlisted for 20 years. My brother is just commissioned out of West Point, and my sister's in ROTC. So we have a long family history of the Doans in the Army. For me, something that I realized was, my dad's service really paved the way for all the privileges that I get to enjoy in my life. If my dad hadn't served, I probably wouldn't have been able to afford to go to college and enjoy the life that I have now. And so I felt like, it was really important to pay that forward and give my time because I've benefited so much. And so, it was a love letter to my father. He provided so much for me and my family that there was no other way that I could really show that than sharing that experience together.
And Sergeant DeVos, you're from a military family as well, right?
I am. My mom and my dad are in.
Okay, so then did that play a part in your decision to join as well?
To be honest, I really respected my dad for everything he did, but I didn't really understand it because I was so young and still so young when he got out. But my brother joined exactly a month before I did, and he was like, do you want to be in the National Guard with me? And I also just wanted to I'm super independent, so asking my dad for help with college or anything like that, I don't know, I just didn't want to. So I was like, yeah, I'll do it myself. And I then joined, I think, exactly a month after my brother.
You said both of your parents were in the military?
Yeah, my mom was a drill sergeant, and my dad was a...
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so...
And your dad was what?
He was a command sergeant major.
Oh, that's awesome.
But he was MP. They're both MPs.
Cool. My people. My people.
You did not choose to become an MP.
Why?
Just too much of it growing up.
Now, was there any difference in how they treated your brother's decision to join the military and how they treated your decision?
No, they were. Both of them were absolutely ecstatic for both of us to join. And my dad especially was really proud. And he actually was here when he pinned me for sergeant. And just the entire time he had this proud smile in the background, just like, that's my little girl.
Aww. And Sergeant Meach, what was involved in your decision to join the military?
Well, originally, I was a part of the Wazoo ROTC program. I wanted to do the S&P cadet route, but that didn't really work out because I'm not in college anymore. But I really enjoyed my time just being a part of the execution process of what junior enlisted and enlisted soldiers do. So that I continued on that way, and kind of my decision to stay was how much I loved being a part of the Army.
So before you went to college, had you ever thought about, joining the military before that, or it was just kind of in close proximity?
It was close proximity. They held a whole lot of, different activities and stuff that you could be a part of. They had this one, exercise job fair thing where you could, do some workouts with them and get to know the cadets, and you dragged me in.
That's how they get you.
They got me. They definitely got me. And just from then, I've been a part of the military since.
Do you have any family in the military before you?
No.
Do you have any family after?
No, just me.
Okay. Lieutenant Bentley, what's your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. A pretty similar story to Lieutenant Doan, a handful of family members in the military that kind of laid that groundwork for it's a reasonable thing to do. Midway through high school, I was thinking I wanted to go to medical school and become a doctor. So I was thinking about ways to pay for that. And then I was at some conference and a recruiter said, if you're looking at the HPSP scholarship for medical school, you might as well do ROTC. So I applied for the ROTC scholarship and the ROTC worked out and the medical school didn't. And then along the way, I fell in love with the service aspect of being in the Army. And that's how I'm here.
Tell me about your experience with a recruiter and how did that go?
It was actually a really funny story.
Okay.
So I don't know if you know Sergeant Dornboss.
I do.
Yes, he was my recruiter, and he actually worked for my dad when he was in. So I came in, and he was like, "Boss, your brother just joined, right?" And I was like, "Yes." And he's like, "Your dad gave me that sword on the wall," and he was really chill. Like he was amazing. He kind of told me everything, got me really prepared for MEP. So I actually had a really great experience with mine.
So from the beginning, from recruiting to MEPs, was there any time that you thought that there were jobs or anything different from being a female coming into the military from any of the males?
I think in basic and AIT, I didn't really experience it that much at all, or really, really getting in general. Most people were very professional, and I mean, in basic and AIT, everybody sucks.
That's a good answer.
But kind of coming into the workforce as an AGR, I definitely experienced some things that I think I wasn't very prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
One of them specifically kind of was, I guess, a ringer for me. When I interviewed as AGR, I was ecstatic because it was the first job. I got immediately hired, and it was just amazing. But I remember going around the office, I was before ADOS with RV. I remember being like, everybody, I got in. And the first two people were like, it's probably because you're pretty. And my jaw dropped. I was like, that's a horrible thing to say. And then for the first 6 months of my job, I was just so nervous. And I felt like, what if I didn't really earn this? You know, that was probably something that really affected me.
And how do you feel now at your job?
Oh, I feel great. I remember it was probably also 6 months in when I asked Sergeant McGuire, like, why did you hire me? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I think you'd be a good fit. You know, you were determined. You learned everything. You had already the MOS you needed, and he just really made me feel better about it. So now I feel great. You know, I have soldiers that respect me, and I respect them, and yeah.
Okay. And when you guys branched, did you feel like any branches weren't open to you?
When I was trying to find a slot to commission into, I was really looking at logistics, intelligence, or engineering, and I didn't experience any restrictions finding slots like that.
And I had the same experience. So I actually did go through a recruiter because I went to OCS, and so I worked with Lori. He was really great. I kind of feel like I had a little bit of advantage there because my dad had the experience, and so walking into the recruiter office wasn't like, I felt like I had the power because I knew what I wanted walking in. But I didn't feel like there was anything different from me versus anyone else that they were working with. And then when I branched, same thing. I mean, they said, well, what do you want? And so I gave them my list, and that was it. There was no questions asked about why I had made those choices, unless it was like in a conversational way, but not in a, oh, are you sure kind of a thing. So not at all.
Okay. And Sergeant Meech, your MOS, your 88 mic, right?
I have an 88 mic.
Okay, tell us about that experience. And from a female, point of view.
There aren't, I guess from day one, I could see that there were not a lot of NCOs and leaders that were looking like me and are similar to me. So I noticed kind of like, not necessarily a gap really, but kind of just like a missing point of like, there aren't a lot of leaders that look like me, talk like me, act like me, stuff like that. So I was like, that is something that I could work on, that I could help fill, and I could help, you know, propel myself and others that are like me into that way. There isn't a whole lot of, there's quite a range of different people in the 88 mic world because we all do, we are 88 mics that move stuff. That's what we do. We move things. But there are 88 mics in the 1041st Transportation Company out in Spokane, and they line haul, so they move things across states and whatnot, and that's what they do for ATs. They go all the way to, like, Kansas, or I think Wyoming was one of their ATs. And then you have the FSC aspect that I'm a part of and totally got to be a part of, where we do ammo, we help run whatever it is that you need out in the field or out to wherever you need to get to, whenever you need to get it there. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning, like, hey, gotta get it out there. But I haven't, there aren't a lot of females in the 88 mic world, at least not a lot of leadership 88 mic females. They have gone and done better things with their careers and retired and whatnot. So there aren't a lot of us out there, but we are there and trying to make sure.
I love hearing that that's, like, your motivation to kind of be that representation, because I think sometimes it's, I don't know, Laura, if you feel the same way, but, like as a middle-level manager, and you've had a little bit more of a military experience than I have, but sometimes you get wrapped up in just, like, okay, I'm going to show up to work and do my job, and you forget that, like, you are a little bit of a representation for somebody else. So the fact that, like, you... Because I never thought about that when I was, like, a lieutenant. Like, oh, I don't see a lot of female officers. I was just trying to do the best I could at my job. So the fact that, like, that's a motivation for you, that's really, I don't know, introspective, I think, and super impressive and a cool goal, because I do think it's important.
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing, because, you know, as I look back on my career, I've become, you know, a huge believer in the concept of if you can't see it, you can't be it. And, you know, I spent a few years working in recruiting, and one of the things, like, every time I was invited to a high school, I made a point of making sure I went. Because when I was in high school, I would have never imagined myself in the military. And equally, I don't think any of my family, any of my teachers, like, any of my peers would have imagined me in the military, you know, because I just wasn't that kind of a kid. And there was no representation that would have said a person like me could have been in the military. So I love to go out and talk to young people and tell them, you know, like, because, and, you know, that's always been one of my other philosophies is there is a place for everyone in the Guard. And, you know, as an intel professional, like, there, you know, we have our group, you know, we have it. There's a place for people who want to do intel things, and there's a place for, you know, for everybody in the Guard, but they have to be able to see it, and they have to be able to see themselves in it. So that is, like, such a huge part of, you know, what we do and what we represent. So I love the fact that that's the first thing you think of as well.
I love that I saw some, like, big head nods down there, too, because that kind of tells me you guys feel the same way.
Absolutely.
So, like, do you have, like, an experience or you kind of seen it or...
Yeah, I think in the past year, it's become way more meaningful to me. I've been working in the Joint Operations Center full time. So seeing Colonel Derda, seeing Colonel Gentry come in, those strong women leaders. And then obviously I'm in the BSB, the Brigade Support Battalion. The former commander was Colonel Galvin, and now it's Colonel Rainey. And
yeah,
meeting Major Dutton, like, not too long ago, you're absolutely right. And hence the head nods.
Yeah, there you go. I like that.
So, when you look at your careers now, where do you see yourself? Like, I've been in 21 years now. How long have you been in?
Oh, 13.
Okay, and then part two of this interview is we're going to talk to some people that have been in 30 years. Where do you guys see yourselves?
I think as a second lieutenant, that's a hard question to answer.
Of course.
Sure.
So I'm a PL right now, and so I'm still, I think, in a lot of ways, like, learning to define what success is in the Guard. And so if I imagine myself, it's maybe like I don't have a position or a place in mind, but I just want to continue to be someone who's contributing towards the culture of the Guard and providing support to the soldiers that I work with. I mean, that's all I can really see myself doing in the future. I don't see that changing with the position I end up taking. But I think, and, you know, defining success too and seeing yourself in others, like in the Signal world, I haven't really seen any female leadership yet. And IT is still pretty male dominated. And so I think that's a big point. Just being a representative in that community is so big.
I'm also kind of in the same boat where I don't exactly know what my long-term goal is, but one thing I do really enjoy with what I'm doing currently and would like to do in the future is just really working with the soldiers. I love being able to just, like, I always have a person to kind of take the lead on everything because I know, like, maybe they won't, or if somebody wants to, I try to give the opportunity to them. But there's just something that's really fulfilling about being able to really help somebody out, get to the schools they need to get go to, make sure they have the resources they need to succeed, and I just really enjoy that aspect of what I do.
As kind of like a midway between upper echelon leadership and what junior enlisted soldiers need or want or can get, kind of, I say it all the time as an AGR, I'm an information analyzer and I'm an information getter. Like, I can get you the information that you need, and I can get you the things that you need. I just have to tell me those things. So kind of being the facilitator between the process that happens and the execution that needs to happen. So facilitating is, I think, is exactly where I need to be, where I am.
Okay.
Do you guys have, like, a favorite, like, experience you've had in the military so far? Like, just... like anything you've done, training or just even an interaction or something cool that's happened.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, we got one on there.
First Battalion went to Thailand over the summer for Hanuman Guardian, and that was a lot of fun.
Yes.
And I learned a lot and made a lot of great relationships.
Good food.
Oh yeah, I love the food.
And the cobra.
I stayed far away from the cobra. Intentionally.
Wait, there's an actual cobra?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I've seen the video.
Yes, yeah. They do like a nation building, like their snake expert team does a little show. It was impressive.
That's awesome.
And terrifying.
Far away
I stayed far away from the cobra.
Have you guessed? What's your favorite part so far?
I think mine, and this is not as cool as Thailand, but not this AT, but the last AT we were at during the summer, I got to learn how to drive a Humvee. and so it was like, it was my CO and my PSG. They were kind of like, you got it. And I was super scared, but we had a lot of fun learning how to drive that vehicle. And I felt like that was like a really like defining moment for me because I felt like, you know, we weren't doing any exercise or anything in particular, but I felt like a member of a team, like they were invested even just in teaching me how to do this task that seems almost mundane. And we just had a really fun experience together.
Well, we're going to raise that this summer, and we're going to get you Striker qualified.
Yes.
NJLTV qualified. Wow. And I believe Sergeant Meech might actually be a person to help you get those qualifications.
I think so.
There you go.
Together, so that makes sense. I think my favorite, just overall military experience so far, has been when I deployed to Poland.
Okay.
For the first rotation that I was out there, it was kind of the first chance for me to, not that we don't do our job during drill weekends, but to do our job every day for a 9-month rotation was really eye-opening to what we can do and what we're able to do and what we're capable of, not only, you know, as a battalion, because I went with 3rd Battalion, but as kind of what an FSC can do, because that was my first time as well, being a part of an FSC and what their mission was, because before I was at the 1041st, so we didn't do any FSC things. So learning how to do ammo, learning how to manage, you know, fuel missions, LTO over there is nodding her head because she knows Gulf Company. Just being out in Poland and being able to do the mission and fully execute it day after day, for 9 months, and just really being able to do the job.
My current favorite experience is my previous annual training when we went to Idaho. One, we got to learn all the signals equipment, and I got to wear the big backpack with all the stuff on it, and I got to track everything. I thought that was so cool. We also had just like a good like, retelling of everything that we did in AIT,
mm-hmm.
which it was so nice to have like such a long refresher on everything because I remember being like, oh, I know that one. I know what that is.
Solid.
But I remember when we went there, one of the really cool things that we did, it's not something we always do too because we're intel, but we learned to room clear because we had a couple of police officers there, and so we learned to do it the regular way and then the officer way, and I thought that was really cool too, especially since my brother's a police officer, so I was like, I know what you do now.
All right, well, tying this back to, you know, Women's History Month, and especially, like, looking at through the lens of women in the military and women in the military right now, what was your biggest surprise through the lens of, like, a misconception? You know, because we all have our idea of what we're getting into when we first go to basic training and we get to the military. So what was your biggest surprise? And we're going to say, like, a pleasant surprise. That when you joined?
I can take a crack at it.
Okay.
I think someone mentioned it earlier, but I think the pleasant surprise was there really is a place for everyone in the Guard. Supporting the infantry battalion, there are not a whole lot of small women at these drill weekends. But it's been pretty validating and confidence building to see how much I can contribute to the great Americans that are doing like the stereotypical like soldier things, you know, like sleeping out in the woods and driving the strikers and shooting them at their targets. So yeah, that's my pleasant surprise. There really is a place for everyone and everyone can contribute and make a valuable contribution.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the culture is more inclusive than people might believe at first. So, I mean, maybe you can tell or you can't, but I'm mixed race. My mom is Japanese and my dad is from the U.S. And so I feel like for a lot of my life, I'd been searching for a place for myself and in a culture that would take me and where I would fit in. And so I'd always really felt split between these two worlds, right? But then in the Guard, and I have this uniform on and we're all together, like, I really feel like we do have a very unifying culture because we have a really unique experience that we share. We're sharing the same mission, the same team. And I think that's really validating. I think it's one of the few places that I've ever really felt like, you know, no matter what I looked like that day or how I felt, I was still accepted in, and I had an in-group. And that was something I had been missing for a big part of my life. So I think that's really, really cool about the Guard.
I think something for me was absolutely the bonds that I've made through all the things that we go through together. I mean, sleeping for like 6-7 days straight in a sleeping bag with your friend next to you and just going through everything together, no matter how kind of stressful it can be, it's just so nice to have somebody who understands and is going through it with you together. And at that point, like, you think back on these times and you're like, you know, I didn't really like it at the time, but I'm glad I did it and I'm glad I experienced it with these people.
I think we've all touched on it a little bit already, but just the culture and the inclusivity really has been the most surprising, pleasant surprise, pleasant surprise, because you think of like the recruiting videos and stuff like that that are from way back when we were in high school, they didn't have the inclusivity of women really in those recruiting videos, and you're like I could probably do that job, but there is a guy on there, so maybe that MOS won't be like available to me or anything. But I mean, hitting all the points again, really, there really is a place for everybody in the Guard, and there isn't any place in the world like it. Yeah, that's been the most pleasant surprise and the thing that keeps me coming back for more.
And as a leader, like every organization I go to, I want to build a team. I want to keep the team together, and I always want, you know, like you learn that a culture of an organization is culture's strong and it's going to keep moving. But you want to have your impact, and you want to at least make everything 1% better and keep it moving. So, from you guys, what's your 1%? What's that 1% you want to improve?
I think what I touched on before of like kind of why I joined the military is being that leader that or being kind of a standpoint that other people can see that like, hey, she looks like me and she's a leader and she's doing great things in the Army, so maybe I can do that too. But doing it kind of on like a state scale, really. Doesn't mean like I'm gonna go be like the state sergeant major or anything, but just kind of being like a touch point that people can kind of look to and be like, hey, Sergeant Meech, you know, how did you do what you do? You know, like, how did you get from being a PFC to being a staff sergeant? Like, what did you do? How can I do that? How can I be like you? Kind of, and just being, you know, one of the NCOs or one of the leaders that they can come to.
Okay.
Yeah, like, when you were talking about that, it makes me think about, like, I was asked to write a speech, like, I don't know, it was like 2 years ago or last year for a Veterans Day event, and it was about Women's History Month, and they were like, just talk about, like, what it's like to be a woman or female in the military, and I'm like, where do I start? And I started thinking about sports, because I love sports, and even now, like, if you, like, look at, like, say, women's basketball, and you've got a couple gals that are playing basketball right now that all shoot, like, three-pointers from, like, pretty much, like, the logo and the halfway mark, and they're consistently draining these shots, and I'm sitting there thinking, like, well, that's farther than the male three-point line, right? Like, who's to say, like, women can't do that? It's just, like, we've kind of designed a sport where the three-point line is closer and told females, like, well, that's how you guys should play basketball, when reality is that there's women out there who can shoot the ball consistently much farther, but they've never had the platform or the opportunity to do that because they've been told to play a game where it's, like, a different game, right? And, like, so when you're talking about, like, being a representative and getting out there and just, like, being the best at your job or, you know, taking pride in what you do, just to be there for other people to see it, like, I think that's so meaningful because, like, you can see it in sports now and you can see it in the military now where, you know, we've taken away some of those barriers of females can be in combat roles. And I think it's only a matter of time where leaders like yourselves start progressing through the ranks and just being like, yeah, I don't understand why this was a big deal or this was a barrier because, like, I've been doing this my entire career. Where, like, old people like us, you know, we weren't allowed to do some of those things. And now somebody's like, well, would you do that? And I'm like, me now? No. That looks painful. Like, I don't want to do that now. But, you know, I don't want to be like, when I was your age, totally. I totally would have taken those opportunities. So it's really cool to see people that want to embrace those opportunities. For sure.
I think for me, it is important for people to see me as a leader and see that, like, you know, women really can do it all. But at the same time, I think the part that I would like to improve is to have the people that work with me feel seen, right? And I think by doing that, being inclusive, you know, being open and empathetic and being vulnerable, I think vulnerability is really difficult, especially, you know, when you enter in this organization with certain kinds of expectations of what people might want from you, but I think, you know, displaying that vulnerability and empathy towards others makes it more possible for them to do those things too. And so I think for me, definitely the thing that I want to improve is in the Guard, and when I leave, I want people to look back on the things that I've done with them and felt seen, and, like, you know, their problems are mine, and we really share that experience together.
I kind of have similar experiences where I'll have soldiers contact me outside of drill or right before drill or whenever they're really having a problem and tell me about it and ask for my advice or my sympathies or just want to be heard and talked to. And especially if they're there in person or if, you know, I know them pretty well because I try to know all of them really well. And I'm able to kind of help them over some hurdles or give them just a lending ear. I really enjoy doing that for people. Kind of, I mean, similar to what I do every day. I love to help people when it comes to that kind of stuff. And I feel like that's kind of my 1% at least.
Okay.
Cool. I think my 1% is in a similar vein. I think I've really enjoyed connecting my soldiers to the resources they need. Trying to, like, lift as I climb, like, when I find out about opportunities or resources, connecting them with the people that I know need them, whether that's financial resources, JSS resources, opportunities for education or, like, warrant officer commissioning or regular commissioning. That's how I try to make my unit 1% better.
So I'm hearing we're building a National Guard where people can see themselves in opportunities of leadership positions. People can see themselves in positions where they're accepted for who they are and they belong.
people are seen as whole human beings that contribute to the team, and they are lifted up and helped to grow on their career along the way.
I think we're in good hands.
They got this.
I was like impressed with your active listening skills.
I'm impressed that they're taking this over. I think you and I can retire now.
Yeah,
okay,
let's go.
Yeah. All right. So I think as we conclude and wrap this up, let's end this on one more look through the female lens. One piece of advice to the young females out there that are possibly considering a career in the military, especially the ones that are like, oh no, the military has nothing for me. What would you tell them?
So I've had a few friends, which I've kind of tried to offer the National Guard to them, since they might have been in a struggling situation or just wanted the resources that the National Guard could provide. And I have a few friends be like, well, I don't want to do that. You know, I'm a woman, and I just don't know how it would be. And one thing that I do is I tell them what I'm doing and how I've achieved this, and you know how the National Guard doesn't really discriminate or do anything like that, and that because of the culture that we've built and everything we've provided. So I guess one of those big things that I really try to push is it is so much easier than you think it is, because it's not going against you anymore.
Okay.
The Army, joining the Army is one of the best decisions I've made in my life, full stop. Mostly because of how it has developed my confidence as a woman, a person in general. And I think it wasn't always easy. I used to have a high school teacher that would say to us when we were like getting down, like, you're not here because you know everything already. You're here to like learn, you're here to grow, you're here to develop. And I try to keep that in mind when I'm going into a drill weekend and I'm freaking out, like, oh my gosh, like I can't handle this, like I don't know what to do. The advice is really like, nobody's expecting you to be perfect, but you're always going to be getting better, learning, and there's an extent to which the confidence is fake it till you make it. Like, mm-hmm. you're just going to make the best decision you can, and then you're going to make better decisions in the future. So that's my advice.
That's really good. Yeah, that's hard to follow.
I don't like that you followed me.
I would say, yeah, lead with your heart, I think is what I would say. I think your values, your experiences, they will be important to someone. Be vulnerable with that. Be open with the people you work with, and people will follow you, and you'll get to experience great teams, great leadership, and contribute to sort towards something you really believe in. I think everyone who joins for maybe their own reason, but I think at the end of the day, we're all helpers and achievers, and we want to do all these things. And I think your heart is a big part of that. And so you should really, you know, give it your everything, but still be you.
Okay. Well, thank you guys for joining us on this panel. I didn't really know where this was going to go when we started, but I'm really proud of the conversation we've had here and where this is headed. And I think this is a great group. So thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you for watching this episode of Raven Conversations. If you liked the content you saw today, please subscribe, like, share, tell your friends, and we hope to see you on the next episode.